Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So sorry for not putting out the podcast on Monday this week. I have been crazy. I'm trying to keep up. And I just recorded this one for you guys. It's a good one on a lot of the basic stuff. I think that there's a couple living in New York City and going over, my dog doesn't go on walks or doesn't like to go on walks. They plant, they flat out. We're using a front clip harness. Should we be using that? This dog is also a constant and habitual humper. When people come over, we get overly stimulated. We're jumping. You guys will hear all that in a minute. But anyway, it's a good podcast just going over behavior and how to kind of go around certain scenarios and try to work with them. As you guys know, we're coming over to the UK. I'm so excited to come over and do another seminar right outside of London. The tickets are in the description below. And don't forget to listen to the end of the podcast because I'm going to be answering your dog training questions. Every podcast I answer three. And if you want me to answer your specific dog training questions, head over to the iTunes review chart. Head over to the iPhone. Wow. Head over to the iTunes review chart and leave a review and your question at the same time. And I will talk to you guys probably tomorrow on Wednesday. Bye.
Basically, we have a 4-year-old King Charles Cavalier Spaniel who, we're seeing like a lot of anxiety out of her. And the biggest problem that we're having is that like anytime she gets like overly excited or we come somewhere like in the house or we have guests over, she will start like humping our legs and our arms, like particularly mine, like basically uncontrollably. She didn't always do it. She started probably last January or like about a year and a half ago. And we did have a baby last September. So there's like been a lot of change in her life, but this particular behavior, we don't know what to do about it. Like overall, she's like a really good dog, but we're kind of stumped and we don't know if it's anxiety. We just like don't know what to do. And I've watched a bunch of your videos and I like just thought you might be someone that we can reach out to kind of get some guidance on like why the dog would be doing this and like how to kind of help her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what have you done so far about it? I mean, as far as it happening, it's hard to say exactly why these things happen. Dogs are just, sometimes they do it because they're excited. Sometimes they do it because they're protective. Sometimes there's no like, oh, dogs hump because of this. There's it wears itself in so many different ways that it's hard to specifically say, oh yeah, like a dog, it's like barking. It's like a dog barks because of literally 15 to 20 different things just off the top of my head. So it's something that anyway, I can't narrow down exactly like, oh, this is why that happens, but it's hit or miss of why these things happen. But the real, and you said she's 4 years old, right?
Yeah. Okay. She's like a little over four.
And it recently started when, I know you said you had a child last year, but this is something that's kind of started more recently.
No, so it started probably when I was pregnant, honestly. Okay. Is like the best timing I can give you. As it started in like January of 21. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't know, Mike, if you feel this way, like I almost feel like it's kind of gotten progressively like worse, or she's doing it more. Even like in the beginning, it was sort of inconsistent.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's just very frantic. You know, you can tell that, you know, it usually happens, like Ash said, when people come into the house, I think that's the most common, Ash, right? When, when someone, especially if something, someone she knows, and it actually doesn't really matter if she knows them, she just like gets so excited. And yeah, I think that's the best summary, and I agree with the timeline that you laid out as well.
Okay. Okay, so yeah, it probably then is like an overstimulation thing, potentially. If somebody comes over and any type of behavior, it doesn't matter what it is, pulling on the leash, barking, humping, jumping, you name it, nipping, whatever. If it happens more often when there's stimulation, then that's probably like an excitement thing more than anything. So the real question is because this isn't like a... I don't know how to explain it, but it's not a behavior that you guys are like, holy crap, what the heck do we do? I know that it's definitely annoying, but I'm saying it's not like a behavior where your dog is biting people or nipping people or even barking. This is just something that you're like, what the heck is going on and how do we get rid of it? So what are you doing when it happens? Let's walk through a scenario. Somebody comes into the house. She gets excited. She comes over and she starts just going crazy and humping and jumping type thing. Or what does she do?
We've tried a myriad of things. So we've tried like petting her and saying like, it's okay, Scout. Like, it's a nice friend here. You know, just kind of like being really calm. We've tried picking her up or like putting her in our lap, especially like if one of us is holding the baby and that seems to be problematic. You know, like just like reassuring her. We've tried ignoring her. We've tried giving her like a bone, like a special treat when somebody comes to kind of just like, that will stop her enough. You know, she'll take that treat and she'll go enjoy it. And then depending on how long the treat took her to get through, sometimes then she'll come back and just restart the humping. And I finally reached out to you because the other night we had people over and like, I think Mike, you could say it was about an hour where she like, she couldn't calm down. Like it just was happening. Over and over and over.
It is. I agree with your assessment that it's not like biting, but it is. I mean, like your leg gets. I mean, it hurts the human that she's doing it to. But she's scratching you while she's doing it. Like it's something that is a pretty significant issue and has seemed to have gotten worse. Especially, you know, my wife Ashley is usually the recipient. And like, you know, if you have shorts on, I mean, your legs are getting scratched. I mean, it's something that has gotten progressively worse and is, you know, rather disruptive.
Okay. Well, what I would suggest in my experience with these types of things, it's similar to jumping. It's very similar to jumping where the dog gets overly excited. They come over and same thing. It's disruptive. It could be painful to some people because the dog is scratching you up and jumping on you and booping you in your nose and whatever. So what I like to do is just add a little bit of leash pressure or a correction into the mix to teach the dog to not jump. And you have to just do it at the right time and you have to verbally cue it or mark it. So right now you've from what you've said, you've rewarded the behavior up into this point. So you're when she does something, you're petting her and telling her good. Or you're giving her a bone. So those, or you're picking her up. So all three of those things are telling her, this is what I want you to do. I'm encouraging this. Continue to do this. So you'll see significant changes once you flip the script a little bit and add a little bit more punishment into the mix with just like a leash correction. It's very simple. You can remove yourself from the situation and add a leash correction at the same time. So let's say so you'd have the leash. The leash is going to be your enforcement. That's your communication. Okay. Dogs, like if you said, hey, this is terrible, this is why you don't do that to a kid, they would go, oh, okay, sorry. Or you'd say, hey, no more iPad or no more TikTok. And they go, okay, sorry, I won't do that anymore, right? There's easy ways to communicate with that. But with dogs, you have to be a little bit more assertive. You have to be a little bit more physical and not in a negative way, but in a way of, hey, I'm assertively telling you that this is not good. Like if a kid came up with a glass of hot chocolate milk and was going to dump it on somebody, that's how you should handle the situation. What would you do? You'd run over immediately and grab that kid's arm and take it out of their hand and say, no, you'd assert yourself. You'd stop it before it happened and so on and so forth. So with dogs, it would be very similar. You would just put a leash on the dog, depending on what equipment you have or what collars or whatever. That is not as big of a focus. It's more about right now, you have to correct the behavior when it happens in order to discourage it. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I'm just going to go over a couple things. So I just want to go over two really big things to just go a little bit more granular. So positive reinforcement, by definition, when we're working with dogs in particular, is to encourage a behavior to happen again. So we're adding something to the mix. That's the positive that encourages the behavior to frequently happen. Like, we want this to happen again. And then positive punishment, again, adding something to the equation and punishing the dog to that discourages the behavior. So there's two different sides of that. Positive reinforcement is, hey, this is good. We want to see this again in the future. Positive punishment is the exact opposite. So again, like, what you've done is you've added a lot of positive reinforcement into this behavior to encourage it to continue to happen. So now we're just going to flip the script. So what we're going to do is we're going to add a little bit of leash pressure and say, I just like saying off. So the dog jumps up, we say off. And this is something that either one of you can do. I would suggest the person that, so maybe Ashley, this is up your end, because I think the person who's getting attacked or humped or whatever that she's doing.
Jumped on. Whatever,
yeah. Whatever the heck she's doing. I would just correct that. I mean, cause this could, the reason why I'm saying not specifically humping, because this is a type of behavior. If it is stemming from overstimulation, it could turn into just jumping. So she may go,
well, she jumps too.
Exactly. So dogs are pretty smart where she'll go, oh, this isn't good, but then I'll just jump instead. So it's, and really this is like anything else in life with dogs, same as it is with humans. If you don't assert yourself to add some sort of a correction, how in the world will they know that it's not good? And so you can use this as a template for pretty much anything else that you're doing with your dog within reason. So she jumps up, she has the leash on, you say her name, you say off, and then you give her a little bit of leash pressure down. So if she's coming up, I know she's not a relatively huge dog, but she's also not a Chihuahua, so she's, you know. So she comes up, you're just going to take your leash and you're going to pop her down. You're going to say off, and then you just give her a little bit of leash pressure. And then your job is to time your reward system and your punishment like really nicely.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if you know somebody's coming over, she should have a leash on in the house.
In the beginning. Yes. Okay. So.
And what leash pressure is like a quick yank? Like what?
It's a pop. It's, don't think of it as a yank thing. You're not trying to pull the dog away. You're not trying to choke the dog. You're not trying to yank the dog. You're simply, it's a quick pop. You're disrupting what they're doing. You're kind of snapping their attention out. You're kind of like, hey. And so, yeah. So I think, and the direction that you go definitely matters. And so I've seen success with this within a couple minutes where the dog's like, okay, I can't do that anymore. I've seen people do it for a couple of days and then maybe a week, but it really, once you're clear with it, you'd be surprised how fast the dog thinks twice about doing some of this behavior.
Typically we have her like wear a little harness and it's clipped. She's clipped to like the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also did buy the, like, I don't want to call it like a slip knot training leash.
The slip leash?
Like the one that you've recommended. Yes. Yeah. And I haven't used it that much with her, partially because we live in New York City. So like, it's not,
mm-hmm.
I can practice with it in the apartment, but it's harder to do outside.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have a thought on like which one of those you would use or one that's better?
Yeah, typically, so front clip harnesses are going to apply pressure to the dog's sternum, if you will, mm-hmm. like their chest, mm-hmm. and their chest cavity. Mm-hmm. And I'm really, really, I mean, I'm a dog lover, dog owner, and then trainer, right? So I first comes to me of like simplicity and what works.
Mm-hmm.
And to make your life easier, quicker, right? So for me, I like using the slip leash because I have found over the years, not only just myself of being, I was a dog walker long before this as well, and all of my clients out there, that the harnesses, they're not as precise. They don't add that umph that you need to really kind of snap them out of the whatever they're in. So you end up pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling back. And the dog's like, you're annoying me, versus like, hey, this is more correct, more of a correction. So, and then the whole safety thing of the harnesses, of just the dog getting kind of slammed back. Like, I don't think of it as, it's precision over power. So I find that the harness, because it's not precision based, it's kind of just pulling the whole chest cavity at one time. And it's not getting the dog's attention. It's just kind of like rearing them back. And it almost sometimes, to some dogs, if they are frustrated, like, I guess if a dog is doing these things, humping and jumping and getting overly stimulated, and comes up and then you take the leash and you take the harness and you pull them back, to me, I think that would more frustrate the dog and the dog would come right back. What I'm trying to do is be very precise about the exact behavior the dog is doing wrong, so the dog understands that that's what you're doing. So for me, I would recommend the slip leash, because it's more precise and it's going to help you get your point across faster, and you're not going to have to tug the dog back for 2 or 3 days. The dog jumps up, off, pop, off, pop. And I have, if you've watched my videos, you can see how I demonstrate these corrections. It's not a pull, it's a pop. So you're thinking precision over power. So as soon as the dog jumps up, and you can you don't have to move away or anything, you can just stand there and you'd say off, correction. And then as soon as the dog puts all fours down or just makes a better decision, that's where you could mark and reward to say good off. And then you'd pay the dog either verbally, or you'd pay the dog with a piece of food. Personally, for me, what I would do, slip leashes on. It's nice and snug right behind the ears. If you know somebody's coming over, or you guys can time somebody coming home from work, or a friend or a neighbor coming over, whatever, you can time it nicely where somebody comes in. You're not trying to restrict the dog from going up and greeting this person. However, your job is to very precision-wise or precisely to correct the behavior. So as soon as the dog is off the two front feet, off, correction. And then as soon as the dog is sitting there, what I like to do is just pay the dog with like a piece of food or a treat or whatever, the kibble that your dog's eating, and to really teach them it's called operant conditioning. As soon as the dog jumps up, we're like, nope, this is bad, we don't want to do this. We're going, no, leave it, off, whatever you want to say. The pressure comes on, and then as soon as the dog makes a better decision, and just, that's the thing, is like, you have to, it's kind of discretionary on what you would like to see out of your dog. For me, as long as the dog is just on all fours, I'm rewarding that. So if they're spinning around or they're circling me and they're excited, I'm okay with that because they're not jumping. So I'm being very, very precise about the behaviors that we're trying to discourage here.
Okay.
Does that make sense? It's a pretty simple thing. You just have to time it. And the important thing is, when you're doing this, be consistent. Like, everybody has to be consistent when this happens. So the dog jumps up, and you guys can pick whatever you want. It doesn't matter what it is. You could say oranges, but you got to say something and then enforce it. So the dog jumps up, we'd say off. And then if she doesn't get off, then you would pop the collar down and just give her a little bit of pressure. And you're basically just correcting. And as soon as the dog gets down, you'd say, good off. And then you'd pay the dog. And she might jump right back up because she's not used to this game or this scenario. Or she hasn't seen this picture before. She's so used to saying like, you're here, you're here, you're here, doing, 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 and getting like crazy. And so she has to get used to calming down and staying on all fours. And that's where you're paying her. And then the leash can start to go away. And the goal is for her, when she gets excited, for you to say off. And then she gets down and you say good off, and you still reward her. So the overall goal, just like you're teaching a dog how to heel or walk nicely on a leash, isn't to ever depend on the equipment. It's there to enforce things in the very beginning to help teach the dog clearer and faster. Just like with positive reinforcement, the goal isn't, you shouldn't have to go around with an Italian deli at your hip to get your dog to do anything, right? So it's, you have to just make sure you're consistent. And in the beginning, yes, you're going to leave the leash on or the slip leash on for as long as you feel comfortable doing. And then once the dog gets it, you shouldn't have to add any pressure other than your verbal pressure.
Yeah. Okay. And then I guess follow up question to that. So that all makes sense for that behavior. Like, I think is there anything you have a question about, Mike?
Nope.
Okay. So then as a follow-up to that, when in terms of like the leash and the harness, because I do think, to your point, like she finds the harness to be mm-hmm. just a nuisance, and we walk her a lot, but then she has a dog walker, and I think the dog walker is great, but they definitely, she walks with other dogs and they walk really slow. So when we're trying to walk with her in the city and like keep pace, you know, she'll decide like she's going west and you're going mm-hmm. east, and she'll pull really far backwards. What would be your recommendation of like the same thing? Would you feel that slip leash is like safe enough to use in the street? Like, what do you recommend?
Yeah, it's a good question. It can be. I've taken 100-pound plus German Shepherds out with slips, and they've done great with yielding to leash pressure. But one thing I'll say is, like I talked about earlier a little bit about the heel, is when you get an animal, right, they're especially any type of working line type of dog, spaniels, King Charles, terriers, dogs who are historically bred to hunt and retrieve and to chase. And what my point is animals are animals, right? They're savages. And we are basically like, hey, come and live with us humans. And don't get me wrong, I understand that over time and genetics, dogs have been domesticated pretty considerably, but they still will go and kill things and eat dog poop and rabbit. They're still gross and still animals, right? So my point is when you go out with an animal on a leash, on a piece of string, if you will, with the slip or just the harness or whatever, you have to be realistic and fair to what you're asking the dog to do. So essentially, when you go outside, they have four legs, we have two, they're animals, they got a lot going on. You're expecting them to walk in slow motion at your pace in a very distracted environment. And so my answer to your question is, you have to teach the dog what you want first before you expect this behavior to happen. So if your dog doesn't know, because that's the question I always ask. Okay, my dog is pulling. We go east, they go west. Got it. What do you want your dog to do alternatively? Well, I want my dog to walk nicely. Okay, next. How much time have you spent on teaching your dog how to walk nicely? Zero. Okay, well, that's where we need to start. And that's 99% of dog owners who go through this road mapping of, you know, I got an animal on a leash and they don't pay attention and they drag me or they pull me or whatever. How do I stop that? And the first thing you have to realize and you have to do is you have to teach the dog the behavior you want before you go out into realistic expectations and then expect these things to happen.
Yeah. I mean,
does that make sense? Fair. So I'll explain in depth, but that's just like the reality. Like people, my dog won't come back. Have you taught your dog to come? No. Well, we can't. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's
well, and she's decent in the, like, the only other thing I'll like layer on before we like get into the walking mm-hmm. is that we live in an apartment building in New York, and it hasn't been as bad lately, but we have seen her be like very aggressive towards other dogs in the building when she's on the leash, like in the lobby. So that would be another like just leash issue that we've had. Yeah. And it's not constant, but since we moved into this building last March, it never happened before. Like we lived in plenty of other buildings. She never was like this. For whatever reason, in this building, she has like decided that she needs to be like very aggressive when she's on a leash with other dogs. Mm-hmm. Mike, you can add to this because I feel like you've experienced a lot of it too. But that is just like one other, I think, like kind of issue we'd love to like get advice on how to handle. It yeah. sounds like maybe some of the same strategies as the like humping would be effective, yeah. but I'd love your input on that too.
Yeah, very similar strategies for sure. And it really comes down to what are you doing about it realistically? So if you think about, you get into an elevator, there's another person, she starts to do whatever, growling, lunging, barking, jumping, whatever. You have to really take into consideration, okay, what have I done about this so far? Have I pulled the dog back? Have I tried to distract the dog with food? Have I picked the dog up? Have I tried to feed the dog habitually until the person gets off the elevator or we do? I mean, you got to think about how much you've actually paid this dog to do that behavior. And then you have to ask yourself and really audit what you've done about it effectively. So again, like these are the types of things kind of similarly to the jumping and the pulling on the leash is, and this is normal. So a lot of dog owners kind of have these multi-layered things, right? And this is why I was saying this earlier, is you're going to see other behaviors start to pop up, or you're going to see other behaviors that your dog does that you want to discourage, right? And if you're not doing a good enough job at being clear with your discouragement, then the dog is going to continue to do these things. So any type of behavior you don't like, ask yourself how much, if when you correct your dog or when you tell your dog to leave it, how much do they turn around and look at you and go, my bad, and stop? And if the answer is zero, then you have to try to be creative and you have to work at finding something else alternatively that will help you move on. And I'm not married or subscribe necessarily to this is the only tool to use, this is the only piece of equipment you use. I just like to encourage people to use certain tools that are out there that are really safe, because they've been really helpful and help solve a lot of issues for millions of people. The slip collar, the plastic pinch collar, the prong collar, these are the types of things that really help you communicate with your dog more effectively. So I think my answer to you is, going back to the, let's go back to the pulling and then we'll get to the elevator. But again, when you have a dog doing a behavior you don't want, such as pulling on the leash, there's two things. Is how well does the dog know how to do the alternative thing of walk nicely on the leash? How much time have you spent on working the dog how to heal? Some people can get lucky where they get a dog and the dog literally never pulls. And then you get a dog that pulls and you're like, what the hell's wrong with this thing? I don't understand. But as a professional, my job is to tell you that realistically, your dog's going to continue to pull in these high distracted environments in Manhattan or in New York City in general if you don't teach them, say, hey, I'm going to cue you to walk nicely. Just like with kids, right? You pull into Disney World, you pull into the park, they want to get out of the car and run across the busy parking lot and see Mickey Mouse. They're not going to do that, because you're going to say, hey, I want you to hold my hand. Just like we did when we were kids, we listened to mom and dad for those reasons. But if you don't have that accountability and you don't have that control and communication, it's going to be very, very hard. And likely what you're doing now, which a lot of other dog owners do, is they just hold on to the dog with the harness and pull it back, or they pick it up and then move on. And it doesn't help really teach the dog how to get over these things. So my suggestion is do a little bit of heel work, which I can go over if you'd like. I'm not sure how familiar you are with it or how much you want to know about it. But the other thing is just getting some piece of equipment that can help you yield to this leash pressure. So if your dog is pulling, if you think about the mechanics of how the harness may work, is if the dog is pulling actively and you're pulling their chest back, you have no leverage, you have no power steering, you have no ability to really fine tune these things and change the direction of the dog. That's why the slip leash is really nice, because you can.
And I think, sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good.
She's not pulling us forward, so it's slightly different in that she's often like stopping and refusing to walk. So you're trying to pull, so we're trying to like get her to walk, mm-hmm. and she is on all fours saying like, I'm not walking, I'm going back.
Yeah.
So just in terms of like having issues.
Yeah. And even further back. So there's like these pillars of certain things. And even before teaching your dog behaviors, you should teach your dog how to yield to leash pressure. So if you think about it like a diagram, you have a dog that understands certain verbal cues and markers, and a dog also understands leash pressure, which is kind of like a horse, understanding that if you pull back, they go back. If you pull left, they go left. If you go, so on and so forth. They have to understand how to shut leash pressure on and off, and that's the very beginning thing that we do with any dog that we work with, is they have to learn how to shut the leash pressure off first before you can really do things. And this is, again, where different types of equipment is out there. Like if I was a mastermind contractor, carpenter, and you were working on a project and I said, hey, you're using the screwdriver and you need to be using the ruler, these are the types of things that we're talking about, that when you're going out, let's paint a picture. You go out, you're walking down the street, all of a sudden she pancakes, boop, on the ground. You have a front clip harness, so you're moving forward, potentially with a stroller, whatever else you got going on, and then you pull her and she just gets dragged, and she would rather just get dragged than actually walk with you. Now, in my experience, and with all of my clients, if we switch to that slip collar that applies that pressure to the dog, what you're able to do is apply a little bit of pressure, and then the dog goes boop and then moves forward. But if you think about when we add pressure to a dog's chest and we basically bear hug them and try to pull them versus putting something directly behind their skull, essentially, and give them a little bit of leash pressure, they're going to actively move with the piece of equipment that's going to give them more pressure where their power steering happens, which is their head, versus a dog getting bear hugged and dragged. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And
I was just going to say something that you can do tonight or tomorrow or whenever you have time is go out and do that. Put the slip on, go outside, and then just start walking. And as soon as she pumps the brakes, and as soon as she kind of fights it, she's like, no, I don't want to do this, or I want to go the other way, or whatever she wants to do. You turn your back and you just give her a little bit of leash pressure. And I'm telling you, it's like clockwork. The dog will buck up a little bit, and then she'll go, oh, I have no choice. And then she'll jump forward with you.
Okay.
I've seen that happen 100 times in New York City, like all the time.
And what would be like, if we're using this leash, which I like watched your videos and I ordered it and then, you know, proceeded to like not do a lot of practice with it yet, but things feel more desperate now. Where would you like, what would be a good cue? I mean, what would be a good cue to like start introducing her to that? Is it just practice walking outside?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like for the, like, this is how I'm now going to correct you.
Yeah. So just basic leash pressure. So what I like to do is put the leash on, because a lot of dogs who have, just like putting a muzzle on or putting a collar on a dog in general that's never really had a collar, they're going to be scratching and rolling over and they may be uncomfortable with it. But what I like to do is just put the leash on and just start teaching leash pressure. So if you have a hallway, go out in the hallway and walk forward and then backpedal. And then the dog's going to go, like you said, east, and then you go west, and you just you start teaching the dog how to shut the pressure off. So they have to, it's called negative reinforcement. So you're taking away the leash pressure the moment they commit to you. So you're reinforcing the behavior by taking the pressure off. So if you pull back on a dog and they turn around and walk with you, boom, you've won. But my point is you have to teach them how to do that in order for that to work in any application. So that's the first thing I would do. Go out in your hallway, either in your building hallway or in your home hallway, and just do a little bit of leash pressure. And what I like to do in the beginning is a calibration. That's what I call it. So I walk forward and I turn and I say, come, and I just turn and go one way. And typically the dog goes one way, you go the other way, and then you just give the dog a couple pops on the collar, and your momentum is just walking forward. You're just moving. And then you do the same thing. And then eventually, if you do it right, the dog will look at you and turn every single time you turn, and then you give the dog a break. So that's the first thing I would do, is just teach this dog how to shut the leash pressure off and also get accustomed to yielding to teach the dog how to yield to this leash pressure. So basically, if you pull one way, all the dog has to do to shut the pressure off is take one step forward, and then it shuts off. Just like I was talking about outside, if the dog plants on the ground and says, I'm not moving. But if you're using a harness, it's like, it's nothing to them. They're like, yeah, whatever, drag me. But if you use like with a horse, like I equate this, horses, llamas, donkeys, any huge livestock animal, if we were to just lasso them from their, basically where you sit, where the saddle is, we'd never be able to get them to move anywhere, ever. That's why they're in halties. You have to apply pressure to an area that they actually will help yield to. So, and the goal, because then you'd say, well, I don't want to tug my dog around. No, you don't. And you don't have to. But in the beginning, there's going to be some friction. There's going to be resistance. Right. But as soon as, like a horse that knows leash pressure or pressure in general, you grab the reins, you walk forward, they follow you. You're not dragging them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's how it works.
All right. I mean, I think that makes sense. Like, is there other stuff? Like, do you want to ask him about, like, the kids and stuff? Or do you want to, like, a larger issue?
Yeah. I mean, we've had a couple situations where, like, and I think the answer here might just be, look, there's not much to be done. But, like, toddlers, not ours. She's very good with our baby. But we've had a couple, like, our niece one time and our friend's kid, like, got her from behind. And she doesn't nip. But she certainly expresses dissatisfaction with, like, a growl, you know, and kind of turns around, and it you know, it's unsettling for the kid. Again, you know, we watch the kids and make sure they don't get her from behind, because obviously the dog's just reacting to something that they were not expecting and scared them or whatever the case may be. But we have had a couple incidents. And like I said, the dog's certainly not biting the kids, but it's a pretty aggressive growl and spin around, you know, towards the child.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like you said, it's, I think we have to have this gray area of fairness to the dog of, like, if we're going to have other toddlers or kids around, we have to just be, I think, respectful and mindful. And we have to kind of split hairs here about what is acceptable and warranted from a dog's point of view. And then what is not. Meaning, if a dog growled at a random kid that doesn't live, obviously your dog knows your child, and that's why they're good. But and your child, you guys as parents do a good job, I'm sure, of advocating for the dog to say no, and vice versa. And so that's why they get along well. But other kids who maybe don't have dogs, or other kids who have dogs who don't care about anything, or whatever the case may be, I think that there's that fine line of making sure that you guys are advocating for both parties. That, because I'm just saying, if a dog's laying down sleeping, or if a dog's standing there wagging their tail because they're excited to see you guys, and a kid comes up and, you know, grabs their tail or smacks them in the head with something, I mean, these are things that you got, and I know you do, and I know you are, but I guess my point is, Mike, is just there's a discretionary, making sure that you guys are protecting the dog, but it's kind of the same thing you guys already are doing. I think if a kid comes up and does something to your dog and your dog turns around and growls, you guys are yelling at the dog immediately and saying no. So I don't know how to answer that, but I think it's kind of like what you were saying, is you're going to use a correction, but it's probably going to be verbal because these things are going to happen kind of randomly. But I would say obedience is really helpful in these scenarios, because if you had, like, a good go to your place or your bed command, it would be really helpful when there are toddlers and kids around. Because for me, if I came into the house and I had three little ones running around, I would say, hey, dog, go to your bed. And the dog would go to their bed, and I would say, stay. And then I can delegate a lot easier. But if you have the dog kind of doing whatever around the house, and you have the kids doing the same thing, you're going to, I mean, having a toddler in general, that's pretty much what you're probably going to do anyway, is just walking around and playing bodyguard. So yeah, that's my kind of input on that.
Yeah. We've sort of just said, like, if kids are over here that, like, don't know the dog that well, we've actually just, like, created her in a separate room so that she's not stressed out. Like, I think that every time it's happened, it's either been, like, a surprise, or she was, like, trying to move away from the kid, making it pretty clear she didn't want what was happening. And I guess,
yeah, I would do the same
about it, if we can, like, get as put together as, like, having her go to a bed. But, like, our only other solution has been, like, just crate her and save her from the stress.
Exactly.
You know,
totally do that. Anyway. Do that. Yeah. As a professional, like, I would, exactly, you have the right state of mind on that, is I'm going to crate her for her benefit, because she's not going to love the toddler party that is about to happen, right? So totally. And I would do the same thing if I had three toddlers running around, which maybe I will someday. But I know that if my dogs were, like, unless they were saints, like, literally, like, I would love for a kid to ride on my back, but, like, a lot of dogs just can't handle that much. So totally out back, or in your case, in the crate in the other room, chewing on a bone by themselves. And then just, you know, letting the parents know, hey, dog's in the room, just leave her alone. And that's totally the safest I think, fairest thing to do for both parties.
Yeah. Okay, that's good to hear, because we were like feeling bad about it.
Yeah.
But I think that's
natural.
The best thing.
Oh, definitely.
And
yeah.
then
the
other thing, which I know probably what you're going to say, if it seems like a dumb question, but like we've been pretty like, I mean, whatever. We've always let her like lick a plate after dinner, right? So of course she likes to like beg for food at the table. I assume that like if you want her to stop begging for food, you have to stop giving her table food, like, period. But I'd love, like, you know, is that the answer? Like, or is there a way, like, we can let her lick a plate in the kitchen that's not the dining room after dinner? Or is that just like, she is a dog? What are you doing? You're just confusing her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you answered your own question, but yeah, I mean, dogs are very habit forming, conditioning, and that's what keeps them alive. They're like, hey, good things come from this. Food comes from this. If it's people food, I mean, it's like, it's even more than instinctually staying alive with food. Mm-hmm. It's more like, ooh, this is great. Like chicken or rice or whatever's going on. Right. So I think that's the first step, is if you are sitting at the dinner table and I'm not the one to tell you whether that's wrong or right, because people do it all the time to my dogs and I'm like, whatever, I don't really care. My dog knows not to come begging for me. Cause I mean, but you know, also I was just driving home and I was feeding my dog watermelon that I was eating. So there's that control aspect of if a dog is standing in front of me. So I'll answer two things. Yes. If your dog is sitting in front of you and you're giving the dog table scraps or really any good food, the dog is going to come back for more, just like a stray dog would come back to your door if you fed him. And the other thing is you can have your cake and eat it too, because you guys have already started this. The dog's already four. It's not like she's going to forget like what that means. You guys are eating something yummy. It smells good. I've been paid here before. So here's me shooting my shot. So, but I think what I mean by having your cake and eat it too is being able to use obedience to say, hey, not now, go to your room, essentially, go lay down. And that's what I do with my dog when I have people over. She loves people. My in-laws give her stuff from the table, so it's this whole thing, right? So she comes over and she's like, hey, what's going on? And, you know, can I get any of that? And then I will say, I'm not going to yell at her for doing that. I'm just going to say, hey, go to your touch, which is her bed. And she'd go to her touch and I tell her down. I tell her to stay. And so I would recommend, again, kind of the same thing we were talking about, is if your dog is doing something that you don't particularly like them to do, if you had a counter conditioning obedience cue, she's sitting there begging for food. It's yummy steak and chicken, which she may have been paid for before at the same place. Makes sense. Yep. It's fair. You've taught her that. But if you say, go to your bed or go to your crate or go to your touch, you're going to then be able to counter that with, nope, go away. And that's what I would do.
Okay, I think that's helpful, especially too, because now we have a 9-month-old who's like sometimes feeding her from her high chair. So it's really, I mean, it's hard because you're like, okay, we can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know? No, but she's like, well, this small person will get so.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thank you for calling. We really appreciate it.
Of course.
It.
Yeah. No worries. All right, you guys, you've reached the end of the podcast. Don't forget, if you want me to answer your dog training questions, go over to the iTunes review chart and leave your review. If you guys are on Spotify, do me a favor and also leave a review. It means the world to me. We do this absolutely for free. We put a lot of time and energy into post-production, and the podcast is kicking up shortly because our podcast room over at the new facility is starting to become done, where I'm really excited about. So got a lot of fun stuff in store for you guys for the podcast. So appreciate you guys listening. We're going to get into it. Alice 137 Puppy, best podcast. I absolutely love this podcast. I've listened to every episode so far, but we're super disappointed in the last episode, not because of the content, but because now I have to wait until Tom releases a new episode, and I don't want to wait. Separate from the amazing content, I had one question. All right, here we go. I have a foster that was a street dog, approximately 1 year old, and is going through heartworm treatment soon. Afraid of people, afraid of feeling trapped, and trying to work on training but struggling on how to reward her or pay her for the good behavior. Reward her and pay her for a good behavior I want to encourage. No toy or food motivation, no play motivation, somewhat responds to praise, cowers slightly to physical contact, but not 100% of the time. We are working with a pinch collar, and our bond has improved since implementing this. allowing some levels of communication between us on walks, and it's even helped with some leash aggression. No signs of aggression outside on leash walking besides some food aggression when eating dinner. No issues of eating food from somebody else's hand. Looking for any tips you have to reward her for building confidence in a dog who's been shut down. We have made amazing progress over the last 6 weeks, but looking to make good question. Thanks for listening. I would say that fasting the dog is the first thing that comes to mind. So just fasting the dog and getting them really hungry. So if that means fasting them for breakfast and then going out midday or even in the evening, or fasting them for breakfast and then going out when they're supposed to eat breakfast, super high reward. So get some chicken, boil some chicken, get some steak, get some stuff that your dog's really going to be into. I find that especially street dogs, they can warm up over time. So if you can start off with a little bit of progression of taking that reward, that's good. I mean, the other thing is that high-pitched good girl, good boy is always helpful as well. I think that that's just something dogs do really well with like that sweet, good job, good boy. That's all you can do if they're not taking anything else, and just know that it's going to take some time for that confidence to build, and it may take time for them to comfortably take food as well. So it's just it's a process, but that would be my recommendation to you on that. I would just praise, if not all else fails, praise, and then fast, and then try to up the ante of rewards. Go to chicken, go to steak, go to something that you feel comfortable with, and I think that'll help. All right, you guys, next one, Echo and Patty. Great information addressing the behavior of an intact dog. By the way, I'm an old lady that owns an Argentina Mastiff. You are so accurate on the changes of owning a protection dog. I was blessed to get my dog from a trainer, but it was your videos that trained me. Thanks again, Patty. Thank you, Patty. Hope you're well. He'll work with puppy. On to the next. Dr. HHRD. I found your content through Will Atherton and I've learned so much from you. You both are legends. I have a 5-month-old Newfie who is 70 pounds. Overall, he was super chill and doing great with his manners. Never reactive, but also working on gaining his leadership. Heel work has been our focus, but we are currently using the slip lead, but our pops on his lead don't correct or get his engagement. And when he doesn't want to work or walk, he just plops down and he's worthless. That's what it says. He just stares at us. Would a prong collar be appropriate? He is super thick, double coated, find hard the proper correction. So I would say because he's 5 months and you're really working on, it sounds like you're working on engagement. And when you're working on the plopping down, just know that he's checking out likely and you shouldn't, or you don't want to like really go. Newfies in general, first of all, you got a Newfie, so they're a super large breed who are going to take a little bit more time to learn, and they're not going to work as long or as intense as like a Dutchie or, you know, a really high class working dog for that. Not that they're not working dogs, because they are, but you know what I mean. And then the other thing is it's a puppy and it's a big dog and it's a puppy and it's a big dog and it's a puppy and it's a puppy big dog. So it's you're dealing with two of those things. It's like, hey, this dog is still growing, they're still learning, they're still a baby. So I would just give it some more time, and I would recommend doing small incremental training sessions, and I would be working on your focus and your engagement with food or an item to encourage that to happen. So instead of popping the dog for not doing something, I would truly, really try to focus on encouraging the dog to do the things that you want them to do. But yeah, I mean, you can move to the prong, but again, I would just say that if your dog is getting really tired and plopping down, I wouldn't necessarily sit there and correct the dog for that, because they're letting you know and they're telling you like, hey, I'm done, I'm checked out, I'm done. But if you know that you walk outside and your dog plops on the ground, you're like, okay, this is a little ridiculous, I would just say that the prong collar would be more helpful in that situation with more direction instead of a correction. So in that circumstance, the answer is yes, that would be okay to do. So yeah, That's my recommendation on that. Is the prong collar is okay, but again, like use it more as a directional tool instead of correcting it, because it's a 5-month-old dog. So they're not going to work for long periods of time. They're going to lay down, they're going to plop, because it's a Newfie and it's a puppy. So hopefully that helps. All right, you guys, that's the end. And next week, we're getting into three more. We have World Biking, Yakko, Chevs, Hob 7, and a bunch of others. Can't wait to get into them. Make sure you guys stay tuned. We'll probably just do another one tomorrow, to be honest. So we'll see you tomorrow. We'll see you Thursday. Have a good night, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable. with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah Quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah Baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah Quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.